Looks like it's kind of three quarters full or something. That's okay. Maybe we can just start. So, I assume you all have the schedule and all of those things. Is that right? Yeah, everything is sorted out. Everyone is well lodged. You got a nice room, bathroom, all that kind of stuff. Okay, great. So I'll just get on with business then. All the preliminary duties have been sorted out. So that's great. One of the things that you probably received from Bianca is the schedule. Yeah, you got the schedule for the retreat. And I thought it was a very nice schedule. It's nice because it's just a weekend retreat. And when you go on a weekend retreat, you want to be quite gentle. It's only 2 days. You can't really, you know, you wouldn't have a 9-day retreat. You can kind of gradually ease yourself into the retreat. But with a weekend retreat, it's nice to have a kind of schedule which is very flexible and easy to follow. But remember that the idea of these schedules is really up to you, how you use this schedule. And you can do whatever you like as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, you come to the talks if you want to, don't come to talks if you want to, meditate if you want to, walk in the forest if you want to. But watch out for the snakes, of course, in the forest. It's nice maranasati, death contemplation, when you walk in the forest here. Because there have been snakes spotted recently in the forest around here. So when you walk in the forest, you think, okay, next step could be my last one, right? So if you don't like that, that's okay. You don't have to do that kind of thing. That's my idea of fun, if you walk into the forest. it's a wonderful and beautiful retreat center, so just use it to the maximum of its potential. Yeah, beautiful forest around here, nice large trees, nice bush, beautiful, nice animals with kangaroos. Snakes are actually very rare, but it's that little edge that makes it interesting. Yeah, the fact that you know that there's always that possibility of you know something different might happen than what you expect. That is that. So you please use the facilities well, and it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter whether you sit a lot in meditation. It doesn't matter whether you listen to all the talks. It doesn't matter really what you do. The most important thing is that you feel a sense of contentment and ease while you're here. So use the facilities for that purpose. So you feel relaxed. You feel at ease. You feel good while you're here for this 1.5, almost 2 days, almost 2 full days actually, which is great. So use the facilities in that way, and then you are using them correctly. That is what they're here for. And then you actually, you can actually make some, at least have a break, a break from ordinary things, all the things in daily life, get away from all of the stuff. And this is one of the powerful things about coming to a meditation center, is precisely the fact that you are withdrawing a little bit from ordinary life. Because that kind of puts it in a different context. It doesn't remind you so much of the ordinary things. That allows you to kind of be a little bit aloof, a little bit above the ordinary things of life, because you're withdrawing from that. So you become a bit like a monastic, for 2 days. Because this is how monks and nuns live. You're kind of withdrawn from that society, withdrawn from the business of the world. And these things are actually very important and very significant, and that's why we have retreat centers like this. What a wonderful thing it is that we have something like this in Perth. One of the best retreat centers in the world, I would say. That's what I reckon. And not perfect, of course. Nothing is ever perfect, but plenty good enough. What a wonderful thing it is to have that facility here. And just having that thought that now you are in this wonderful retreat center with like-minded people, and this is one of the things I always like to think of when I come here. What a wonderful thing it is to spend time with like-minded people, good people, people with good intentions, trying to practice well, trying to live life well. Have that companionship, that spiritual companionship on the path in a beautiful place like this. It's very uplifting in its own right. So just coming, getting into that kind of mood or mode of thought or whatever you want to call it is already sufficient, or not sufficient, but it's already very helpful to kind of make your head in the right direction and you know, get you started on the path of meditation, so to speak. What I want to talk about tonight is just some basic instructions about meditation practice. That's going to be the main purpose. One of the things that we were going to have a look at over the next couple of days is some of the suttas, the word of the Buddha, the Buddhist discourses, and basically see what the Buddha has to say about meditation practice. One of the things that I have always found, I found so much inspiration in the word of the Buddha. For me, the word of the Buddha is very powerful. It's very direct. It's very kind of succinct, very compact. It's also very kind and gentle in the way it is expressed. So I find it always very, very powerful to actually approach the whole Buddhist path of meditation practice itself, starting with the word of the Buddha. I find it's very, very useful. These are the original teachings. This is where Buddhism originates from. Yeah, this is what it comes back down to when you want to talk about real Buddhism. This is what it is. And these are the things I want to talk about while I'm here, while we are here. That is the point. And it's very nice when you withdraw a little bit from the world, you find a bit of peace and quiet, hopefully you find some contentment, maybe a little bit of joy in all of these things, and you combine that with the word of the Buddha. These two things together makes it very powerful. When you're peaceful, things tend to sink in a deeper way. So it's a very nice combination, combining meditation practice with some beautiful teachings from the Buddha. Sometimes people say, oh, what are the Buddha? It's so difficult. I read it, I don't understand anything. It's so boring, right? Incredibly boring. So repetitive. Please, I don't want to hear any more word of the Buddha. But actually, it's really, to me, it's almost the other way around. It's a matter of getting used to it a little bit, of course. Because these are oral discourses delivered in India 2,500 years ago. So they have a different structure from what we expect in the present day when you write something or even when you speak. It's quite different from that. But once you get used to the idea of the word of the Buddha, actually, I say here, if there's anything in the Buddhist world which is clear, which is where the meaning stands out on the page, where you can actually understand what is going on, especially when you cross-reference a lot and you read one sutta in light of another one, yeah, and you kind of get the whole picture. It's like a jigsaw puzzle in many ways. Put all the pieces together, you get this beautiful picture, the picture called the Dhamma. That's the picture. Yeah. And then, when you read the suttas in that way, actually, they are quite simple and easy to understand. Not everything, of course, but that's because it's very, very profound in many ways. But I think it is far more easy to understand than the vast majority of contemporary teachers. Actually, any contemporary teacher, because the word of the Buddha is very special in that way. So that is what I am. That is kind of the idea behind this, and using the word of the Buddha together with meditation to kind of, it's like dynamite. Yeah, you have the dynamite and you have the match, two things coming together, and then kind of things start to ignite, and you start to think, wow, this is really cool, this is really great, this is wonderful, and this is kind of this is the plan, right? Reality often different. That's kind of the idea behind this. So let's see how this works out. So let's talk a little bit about meditation practice. Yeah, some very simple things about meditation practice. I'm just going to say the things that I usually say on these retreats. And some of the principles behind meditation is what I'm going to be talking about. And the first principle, and this is a principle that all the suttas of the Buddha, all the discourses start out with. This is straight from the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the setting in motion of the wheel of the Dhamma, which is the first discourse spoken by the Buddha according to almost all Buddhist traditions. This is the first one. And the very first thing he says in the very first discourse, it's kind of exciting, the very first thing in the very first discourse, what is the first thing the Buddha talks about when he kind of opens his mouth after his awakening? The very first thing he says is the middle way here. Yeah, this is the very first thing here. And this, of course, has historical reasons, because the Buddha had previously lived a life of luxury as a layperson, and then he practiced very severe asceticism after that. So the middle way has a kind of, it fits in with the historical narrative, if you like, how the Buddha lived his life. But it's also very important as how we practice the Buddhist path. It says a lot about how meditation is supposed to proceed. And this is why it is so interesting. Of course, the Buddha says that the middle way is equivalent to the Noble Eightfold Path. But before that, he says that the middle way is the way which is not torturing, tormenting, creating physical pain in the body, on the one hand, and not indulging the body on the other hand. That is really the middle way here. And it is astonishing. I have always found it astonishing how many Buddhists forget about this. Yeah, the first teaching of the Buddha, the very first thing he says, is kind of, you think it would be very important, but people forget this. And because they forget this, very often they end up giving up on Buddhism. Yeah, and they renounce the Buddhist path. No, I'm not going to be Buddhist anymore. Buddhism is too much pain. Yeah, and what a terrible thing that is if people give up on Buddhism because all they do is experience pain in the meditation practice. It's so sad because the Buddhist teaching has such incredible potential of changing your life, making you more better, more balanced, more contented, more happy person with less suffering and far more understanding of what life is about. Potential is so great and you waste that whole potential by not following the very first teaching of the Buddha. So remember that it is not about pain. Of course, the body is inherently painful. Yeah, if you try to sit down even for a short while, it doesn't take long before little pains come here and there. So it's not about avoiding all pain. A little bit of pain here and there is okay. But please don't sit there with too much pain over long periods of time because you're going to end up with a different religion very quickly if you do that. Please stay with Buddhism. Buddhism is the best. That's what I think anyway. Otherwise, I wouldn't be a Buddhist monk, right? That's what I think. Yeah. So please avoid that. And so how do we avoid that? And of course, the most important, these are very basic things, but I think it's important to spell these things out. Make sure you are comfortable. Don't be proud. You don't have to sit on the floor. You can sit on the chairs. You can lie down if you want. I know some people who cannot sit at all because they have bad backs or whatever. Lying down is also okay, but maybe be a little bit discreet. Don't kind of lie down right here in front of me or something. A little bit towards the back of the hall or something like that. But that's okay. Some people get very good meditation by lying down. The most important thing is to be relaxed, to be at ease, to be find a degree of comfort. And when you have that, that is where meditation can actually happen. The other side of the story is indulging, yeah? So we shouldn't indulge too much. But don't worry about that. This is a meditation retreat center here, and the chances of indulging here are actually quite slight. You can't really indulge all that much, unless you have some secrets that I don't know anything about. But if you keep to the precepts and you do what we're supposed to do here, you can't really indulge too much, yeah? A cup of tea in the afternoon, a bit of chocolate, or a bit of, I don't know what they're going to serve you, a bit of cheese or whatever. All of that is nothing, yeah? Yeah, so please use those things properly. Yeah? Don't worry about the indulging side. If you want to sleep a little bit extra, please do so. That is not the danger. The greatest danger in meditation is going too far in the creating pain and torment for ourselves. So please don't do that. And then maybe you will come back in the future as well, yeah? On the retreat in the future as well. This won't be your last one if you do that. What a wonderful thing that would be if you get inspired, yeah? Come back again in the future. Some of you have come to many of my retreats before, which is great, yeah? I really, it's nice that people come back, yeah? So that's a wonderful thing to see that. So that is the middle way. Don't worry too much about the indulgence either, but try to avoid too much pain. And then you will be enjoying this little short little retreat that we have here. And what happens when we do this, and this is the whole point of the middle way, not the whole point, part of the point of the middle way. When you have no pain in the body, when you have no indulgence in the body, the body becomes irrelevant. The five senses start to become irrelevant, yeah? The reason why the body is important, the reason why the five senses are important to us, is because either they produce pleasure, and if they produce pleasure, your mind goes out to those things, or if there is pain, then there is something to be done, something to be sorted out. Yeah, you want to get rid of the pain. So this is why the middle way is so useful, because it's not, in one sense, this was one of the nuns who pointed this out to me a few years ago, actually, it's not really a middle way at all. It's actually the way where you kind of get rid of the five senses and the body, put those to one side, and focus on the mind instead. And that was a very good point, I thought. In one sense, it isn't really a middle way. It is a way of the mind rather than the way of the body. And in this way, we can put the body to one side, put the five senses to one side, and then come to the mind instead. Yeah, so this is how you... So when you feel that you're sitting here, you're closing your eyes, you feel quite peaceful, and you feel that the body is kind of becoming irrelevant, is no longer important or whatever, then you know that you are doing roughly the right thing here. So that is a little bit about the Buddhist idea of the middle way. Please take these basic teachings seriously. The reason why people often don't make progress in the meditation practice is because they don't do the most basic things in the right way. It may seem obvious, yeah, but actually it is strange how often how long it takes, you know, for these things to penetrate and actually you understand how to use things in the right way. I say that from personal experience because I'm just like all the rest of you, I suppose. We're all pretty much the same. That's one of the terrible things in life, is that all the same. People don't want to hear that. But where we are is so similar in so many ways. And this is, if I always look at myself. So when I say these things, it's because I have done all this kind of stupid, silly things that's possible already. So I'm trying to teach you guys. You probably have to do it yourself before you figure it out. But anyway, at least I'm going to kind of give you some of this feedback at the very beginning here. So by doing some of just the very basic things, getting the very simple things right at the beginning here, then usually there is a hope that meditation will work out. And very often the most basic instructions are the ones that matter. And we can teach those again and again and again. And it sinks in deeper and deeper and deeper. And eventually it starts to work. So if we are talking about a middle way, between not indulging the body on the one hand and not having torturing the body or tormenting the body on the other, then what does that mean in terms of the state of mind that we're supposed to have? It sounds kind of, what is going on here? What about happiness? Yeah, what about joy? The point here is that just because we're not indulging the body doesn't mean that meditation is a joyless path. Far from it. The whole point of withdrawing from the physical world, of withdrawing from the five senses, is that so that we can enjoy the pleasures of the mind instead. This is what this whole path is about. One of the things that I always found so attractive about Buddhist meditation, especially when I started to read the suttas and understand the word of the Buddha, was the emphasis on happiness on the Buddhist path. And there's one sutta that I read out on every retreat. I'm not going to read it out on this retreat, but I'm going to read it out another one, which is very similar in many ways. But there's one sutta that shows you the experience of meditation, what it's supposed to be from a first-person point of view, how we're supposed to experience meditation. Yeah? And this sutta, it starts off, very interesting, it starts off with sila. Sila is this idea of morality. And we'll talk more about morality later on because it's a very important part of the Buddhist path. It starts off with that. And then from that, it says you have no remorse. Yeah, if you're perfectly moral, you don't have any remorse. You feel good about yourself. When you don't have any remorse, you have pamuja, gladness inside. It's a natural consequence of living well. So gladness, yeah, this is the beginning. Then from gladness comes piti, which is even more gladness. Yeah, rapture is often translated as joy is another way of translating it. From that comes tranquility. Tranquility is this beautiful peace that you get in meditation. When everything settles down and you sit there, you feel really at ease and really relaxed. And that tranquility in the body and mind then gives rise to even more profound sense of happiness called sukha. From the sukha comes, this is kind of interesting again, from sukha comes samadhi. Yeah, samadhi is one of those very significant terms in Buddhist meditation, often translated as concentration. Ajahn Brahm has said that any disciple of his who uses the word concentration will be fired from Bodhinyana Monastery. I haven't actually said that, but he almost said that, almost tantamount to that. He says stillness is a much more appropriate word to use for samadhi. So you become really, really, really still inside of yourself and you are completely focused on the object of meditation. Yeah, that's when meditation really becomes profound. But what is interesting about that, you know, if you're just, if you just listen to what I was just saying before, all of those terms, they're all about happiness, one way or another. The whole Buddhist path, the whole personal experience of meditation, when it works, yeah, when it is a proper real meditation, is about happiness one way or another. The elimination of suffering and the experience of joy, happiness, tranquility, all these wonderful things, various types of happiness. And I remember reading that, I thought, this is astonishing. Yeah, here is a whole spiritual life focused around the idea of happiness. And of course, everybody wants to be happy. Nobody needs more suffering. Yeah, nobody wants more depression and sadness and all these kind of things. So it is kind of playing directly into exactly what we want to get out of life. This is what life is all about. And there it is, right in the suttas. So remember that. And this also is very useful to inform you whether you are practicing right. If you find that there is problems in your meditation, if you don't feel at ease, if you don't feel relaxed, you know, there's no way that happiness is going to come out if you don't feel really relaxed and at ease. So this informs you whether you're heading in the right way or not. So once you have a comfortable posture, once you're sitting on the chair or on the floor, or you are leaning against the wall, or you are standing on your head. I know some people, I heard about one person standing on the head when they did meditation, and it was not a good result. So don't try that. If you get into deep meditation while you're standing on your head, you don't know what happens next. Yeah, that's a bit dangerous. But apart from that, any posture is okay. But the point is, right, you have the right posture. You're sitting comfortable, you are at ease. And then from there, the next thing then is to make sure that your mind also finds a similar kind of ease. We're supposed to move towards happiness, supposed to move towards joy, towards gladness, towards tranquility. So how is your mind? Once the body is okay, the focus is on the mind. What is your mind state like? And this is one of those great ways of just knowing whether you're heading in the right direction. Are you moving towards more ease, more tranquility, all of these beautiful qualities? If your mind is really in great turmoil, etc., it's okay to be in turmoil, but at the very least, you should see that the mind gradually calms down, becomes less restless, becomes less slothful as, you know, these two days kind of go by. And eventually, you're heading in the right direction towards clarity, towards ease, towards all of these positive things. So this is why these things are so useful, because they give us some very clear guidance on what we should expect, what we should actually try to kind of, you know, which way we're heading in our meditation practice. And that is why it is so useful. One of the things I would recommend you to do if you're going to have a sense of joy and happiness on this retreat is make sure that you have a sense of metta and kindness for each other. It is so important. It is one of the things that when you live together in fairly close proximity here, it is so easy to get on each other's nerves a little bit. You live close together and somebody shuts the door in the wrong way or whatever, and maybe, you know, if you are in a bad mood already, it just takes a small trigger and you kind of get irritated or whatever. So remember to have a sense of kindness and metta for each other on this retreat. Remember that the people who come here to Dharmago Retreat Center to do meditation practice, these are the cream of the cream. Do you feel like you are cream of the cream? You are, right? Otherwise you wouldn't be here. What's the point of coming to a meditation center to sit still on the floor doing nothing? You know, kind of, it sounds like torture for most people. But you're coming here to this retreat center to do something very positive, both for yourself and for other people. You're voluntarily taking on all these precepts. What a wonderful thing that is. Even though none of us in here probably is perfect. I don't know, if someone is perfect, I'd like to talk to you. That'd be wonderful if one of you is perfect, but it's rare to find people who are absolutely perfect. But that is not the point. The point is that we are trying. We have good intentions. We're moving in the right direction. We're doing our best. That is really the point. So remember that. Look at the people around you. Look at them with that sense of, wow, how lucky I am to be in the company of people like this. how rare it is in the world to find people who at least are trying their very best, who actually want to do something good for themselves and the world. It's a wonderful thing. And also look at yourself, feel good about yourself as well. This is a wholesome, good kind of feeling about yourself. It is okay to feel good about yourself if you live well. It is not bad. In fact, it is recommended by the Buddha that we have a wholesome sense of goodness about ourselves when we live well. And it's the same thing in the monastery just across the road and with the nuns, the Masara monastery as well. It's a wonderful thing to be able to live in a monastery with fellow monks. Because these monks, they're not perfect. Some of them are getting close to perfection, but they're not perfect, most of them, are not, still a little bit of way to go. But they are very good-hearted people who are trying really hard to live well. And what a wonderful blessing it is to be able to live with people like that. I feel blessed when I look around my fellow monks. And that's why these days I don't get upset that so much anymore. Sometimes I might get a bit irritated, right? It's very easy to hard to avoid that altogether. But generally speaking, I don't, because I actually really appreciate my fellow monks at the monastery. And the same thing with the nuns at Dhammasara. Sometimes I go there as well to do a bit of teaching and things. Also a very beautiful community of very kind-hearted and good people. Obviously, I don't know the nuns nearly as well as I know the monks, but that is the impression I have when I go there. So you too, rejoice. Rejoice in being part of this Buddhist community, being around other people, do the right thing. And as you do that, you are lifting yourself up, yeah? You feel joy, you feel happiness. You don't allow yourself to be dragged down by the little things that can sometimes be irritating, etc. This is one of those extraordinarily important things in any community, that we have the sense of compassion and kindness for each other. It creates a glue in our community that actually makes such communities possible. And then we're lifting ourselves up, helping lift up the people around us, lifting up the whole of Buddhism, because our little corner in Perth, actually, we too are an important part of Buddhism in the world. Everybody matters. So that is a little bit about happiness. Please remember the happiness idea. Another of the important themes when you look at Buddhist meditation in the suttas that I think can also be very useful to enhance your practice. What I sometimes call the outlook, having the right outlook, looking at the world in the right way, looking at the people around you in the right way. This is the term I translate as outlook here, is in the Pali, it is called Ujjukha Ditti, is the word that is used in the Pali Suttas. And this is something that you maybe, I don't know if you ever heard of the word Ujjukha Ditti before, probably not. It means straight view. Ujju means straight in Pali. So if you're sitting straight, that's Ujju already. Ditti means like view or outlook. Yeah, and if you read things like the Satipatthana Sutta, where the Buddha talks about meditation practice in detail, he says that meditation, Satipatthana, is based on two things. One is morality, yeah, very, very important in Buddhism to live as moral a life as you possibly can. I'm going to talk more about that later on, so I'll put that to one side for now. But the other side thing, which is very important, or very interesting and important, is this idea of outlook. What is your outlook on life? And the reason why this is important is because if our outlook is right, if our outlook is aligned with the world as it actually is, if our values are right, if we have the right values, values is so important, values is what drives us in life. What we value is where our mind goes. So when these things are correct, what happens is that your mind tends to incline in the right direction. This is so important. When you sit down and meditate, if your mind inclines in the right direction, you tend to become peaceful because you're heading in the right way. If you have the right values, it means that your mind is inclining in the wrong direction and you sit down and you will never become peaceful as a consequence. So what we value is so important. So having the right values matters so much. So when you sit down, often what you can do is just think to yourself, what is really valuable in this world? What really matters? What makes a difference? What are my values? Yeah? And reflect on that for a short time, and then move your mind, if you have to, in the right direction, so that your values are aligned with the Dhamma, with the Buddhist teachings, in a better way, and then that will enhance your ability to meditate. Because you are valuing meditation practice, you're valuing the breath, you're valuing the Noble Eightfold Path, instead of valuing all the other things in life that are far, far less important. So what do you value? How do you know what you value in life? How can you know that? And the answer is that one of the ways of knowing that is to sit, when you sit down, to see what is happening in your mind. Yeah? What is going on in your mind? That is how you know what you are valuing. And if you find yourself sitting there thinking about your family, yeah, your work, these kind of typical things, yeah, even in the moment sometimes I sit down and I sit in my bed and I think about the concrete work I have to do tomorrow, yeah? I think, wait a minute, I haven't become a monk to do concrete work, maybe I should think about something else. And try to get back to the breath again. But this is so natural, yeah? It happens to all of us. But that is where you see, find out what you really value, or you fantasize about some kind of pleasure. Yeah, oh, what am I going to eat? You know, what am I going to cook? Some people kind of make up all kind of meals and things in the meditation, thinking about all kinds of things. And all of these things, that is where you find out what really matters to you. Just by observing yourself, watching your mind, see where it kind of inclines. And it isn't actually interesting, because one of the things that this shows, you know, I mean, you probably heard about the very famous Buddhist teaching called dependent origination, yeah? Paticca Samuppada in Pali. And in dependent origination, one of the links in there is called bhava. Bhava means existence. So what does existence mean in this context? And what it means is essentially where our mind usually kind of hangs out. Yeah, so where is your mind at? What are you thinking about? What is your internal existence, if you like? And that is what you find out when you sit down quietly and you see where your mind naturally inclines. That is where you exist. That is your personal existence. And that is where you tend to hang out, and the mind tends to continue in that groove. Yeah, it's just like your groove, this track that you are kind of on. And one of the purposes of Buddhist meditation is to change our track and to move in a different direction instead. So notice this in your mind. See what is happening. See what it is truly that you value in life. And ask yourself whether the things that you value really are all that useful. See how much time you spend thinking about all kind of stuff which is irrelevant to the Buddhist path. Probably it's going to be quite a bit, yeah? I can imagine it's quite likely to be quite a bit, because that's usually the case for most people. So look at that and see. And then ask yourself, how valuable are really these things? How much happiness are they going to give at the end of the day? Yeah, and you will find, when you think about these things in the right way, your work, even your family, or all these kind of ordinary pleasures of the world, they are so transient. They are so unreliable. Yeah, you sit here thinking about your work, and then when you come back on Monday, you're fired. Yeah. This is what happens. Or you come back on Monday and suddenly you are divorced. Suddenly your husband or your wife have left you. Okay. So you have been thinking about all this stuff, which was so unreliable. And this is the problem with the world. In the end, it is extremely unreliable and uncertain. It's not something that is under your control. So how much time are we going to spend on things that are so unreliable and so uncertain? So what is certain? What is certain is that if you practice in the right way, if you practice the Noble Eightfold Path, if you have a good heart, and you lean your mind in the right direction, you are going to get good results. Yeah? And that is because, and the reason why this is much more certain is because it is internal to you. It doesn't depend on external things. It doesn't depend on what other people do. It doesn't depend on the politics of the world. It doesn't depend on the weather. All of these things are utterly out of control. It only depends on your internal life. And that internal life is possible to guide that internal life to some extent, to create the positive conditions, the conditions that lead you in the right direction. And remember, I always find it very useful to always remember that death is always around the corner. Yeah. Even if you are still quite young, even if you are maybe in your, I don't know who the youngest person here is, whatever it is, right? But even if you're relatively young, it's not that far away, yeah? Life is relatively short. Ask some of your senior people in the community, ask them if life is really long. Yeah. I mean, I am over 50 already, getting really old, which is actually, it has its benefits, also has a disadvantage, but whatever. You know, it seems so quick, yeah? It was only yesterday I was like 25 or something, so fast it disappears. Death is really always around the corner. It happens so fast. And then ask yourself, when you're going to die, what matters? What is really important? What are the things you're going to take with you into the future when you die? This is the Buddhist idea of things, yeah? And the only thing you're going to take with you into the future, the absolutely only thing, is the qualities of your mind. That is the only thing you're going to take with you. Everything else has to go. Where are you going to invest? What are you going to do with your life? What actually matters? And then when you see that, and you see that in a deep sense, you can let it all go. You come back to the breath. You come back to the present moment. You come back to what is important here and now. And this is what I mean by right outlook. An outlook that accords with the Dhamma, that accords with how the Buddha taught about the world. Put your effort where it matters. Put your effort where you can actually have some sense of real purpose, some real kind of happiness that actually is reliable because it comes from inside of you. And remember the transience of everything else. And as you do that, you can gradually shift your outlook, move it in a different direction. And as you do that, and even you can remind you right now as you sit here, whoa, okay, I'm going to have to watch the breath. I'm going to have to be in the present moment. What I often like to say, I have used this before when I teach meditation practice, is that the way to think about it is everything you do in your life, yeah, everything else, your family life, your work life, your home, everything else is for the purpose of the meditation practice you're doing right here on this retreat. All of those things, if they are lived rightly, they will enhance your ability to meditate. Although those things are secondary, they are not the important things in life, they are secondary. If you live those things well, they will help you to live the spiritual life in the right way, including your meditation practice. So if all of those things are secondary, and your spiritual life and your meditation is primary, why are you going to waste your time thinking about all those secondary things? It's kind of pointless, yeah? They are there to support your meditation practice. They're not the other way around. And because of that, you can move your mind away from those things and into the present moment instead. Many people, when they come to do meditation or live a spiritual life or try to live well, they do it to enhance their ordinary life. I'm going to meditate so I can perform better at work. I can be a better parent. I can, whatever it is, yeah? And that's fine. That's good. But what you're doing there, you're getting your priorities wrong. You're saying the worldly things are most important. Spiritual things are there to support the worldly things. But if the worldly things are more important, it means that when you sit down to meditate, the mind will tend to incline too much towards those things. So instead, shift it all completely around. Make the spiritual things, that is what really matters. In the end, that is where you will find real happiness. That is where you're going to find real stability, real independence in the world. So make those number one. Everything else is to support your spiritual life, your meditation practice. And if you get into that mode, yeah, that kind of idea in your mind, that kind of value system, where you value things in the right way, then it is so much easier to abandon all those things, all those worldly things that hinder you in your meditation practice. So this is what I mean by outlook. This is what I mean by, having the right values in a sense, the values that you support you in this spiritual life and also your meditation practice. So I always like to, my idea is that instead of fantasizing when you're on the retreat, fantasize about this, fantasize about all those worldly things you're going to do. That is kind of the wrong way. What we really should be doing is when you live your ordinary life, yeah, you go to work or you do your family life, you should be fantasizing about meditation. Yeah, that's the right, getting it the right way around. So ask yourself, how often do you fantasize about meditation in ordinary life? Sometimes you might, right? If you get really stressed out, think, oh, it would be nice to go to Jhana Grove. And that's why you come here, because you have a little bit of a fantasy about that. But then that gives you a sense of, you know, things balancing out in the right way here. So that is just a little bit about the idea of having the right outlook, the right values in life. And the very last thing, I'm not going to talk very much more because I want to get into some meditation very soon. But the very last thing I want to say, which also is like a kind of overview idea of meditation. Remember, meditation is extremely simple. It's a very simple thing. What could be more simple than sitting down and just being peaceful and watching the breath? Yeah? Nothing can really be more simple than that. And the reason why people don't make progress, the reason why they find it difficult, is not because meditation is hard, but it's just because our conditioning, the way we come into the meditation is not ready. We're not ready for it yet. We haven't got the right conditioning yet. That is why it seems difficult. But meditation is the most simple thing you can almost think that you can do, really. And because it is so simple, what it means, really, and this is kind of, these are some of the things I always get from Ajahn Brahm. Ajahn Brahm is the most marvelous meditation teacher around in many ways. I've learned immensely, you know, sometimes you just need a good teacher to point you to the right suttas and point you to how it works out. And Ajahn Brahm has been invaluable. I'm so incredibly grateful for Ajahn Brahm and all those extraordinarily wonderful teaching that he's given over the years. And one of the things that Ajahn Brahm always points out is that you don't need to do anything in meditation. You don't need any willpower. You don't need to decide anything at all. All you really need to do is to sit down and just be aware and just be present. It is incredibly simple. And that is why it is so hard. Yeah, it is so simple. That is what is so hard about it, because we're not used to living in such a simple way. So you just sit down and you just wait. And if you learn to wait in the right way, just being here, enjoying, having the right attitude. This idea of attitude, again, is so important. How you feel about the people around you, how you feel about your meditation practice, your outlook and all of these things. And if you just sit back and you allow things to be peaceful, you don't feed the thoughts, you don't feed the fire of will, intention, volition inside of you, but you allow it to die down. You just stand back and allow things to be. Things happen all by themselves. The reason why we think, the reason why the mind sometimes is in turmoil, is because we actually are willing that. We are driving that process ourselves. If you can just stand back and just be aware and do nothing, things calm down all by themselves. It's an incredibly simple and easy thing to do once you get it right. But the ability to get it right depends on all the conditions falling into place. And when those conditions fall into place, oh, it is so beautiful when the mind becomes peaceful and you start to see how this whole process works. So keep simple. Don't complicate things. The simpler you allow things to be, the greater is the chances you will get something out of this little meditation retreat we're going to have over the next couple of days. So, that is all I'm going to say about meditation. Wow, that's exactly how long I was thinking to talk. That's great. Wonderful. Yeah. So, and please, if you wish to ask questions about anything I have said now or anything else I say, there is the chance to write questions down. There is a box outside, a little kind of basket out there. Write down. You're more than welcome to ask about anything you like. And if, anything, nothing is really off topic, but if you can keep it to, you know, to practical things about meditation, that's even better. But you are certainly allowed to ask anything you wish out there. And tomorrow morning, we will then continue with the suttas. But for now, let's do a little bit of meditation together. Maybe we'll do about 45 minutes or so, and then just to kind of get started with the retreat. Okay.